You're listening to an Anna's Books podcast.
Hey guys, it's Aiden of Aiden's Books, and I'm here with Mommy.
Welcome to Parenting and Bonding with Children's Books.
Our episodes are recorded first via video. For the full experience, check out the video interview on my Facebook page, Aiden's Books. Next, you'll hear Mommy doing the interview. Thanks for listening.
Hey, hey, everybody, and welcome to the Parenting and Bonding with Children's Book podcast, where we believe that books are magic and have the power to transform homes. On this podcast, we talk to the authors behind the magic to find out their true intentions behind the books. And y'all, tonight we are here with author Alice Faye Duncan. Hi, Alice Faye.
Hello. Thank you so very much for having me this evening.
I have like a new smile on my face because I'm so excited to be speaking with you. Your books and the lessons for our children and adults are marvelous, and I cannot wait to speak about your two most recent books. I'm going to give you guys a little background on Ms. Alice Faye Duncan, and then we'll get right into it. I'm laughing because I know the first day that we spoke, I called you Ms. Duncan, and you were like, "No, child, call me Alice Faye." And I was like, between that and the glasses, we going to be good. All right, y'all. So Alice Faye Duncan is a national board certified teacher who writes for young learners. Memory is her motivation. She writes to help children remember important moments from African-American history. Her books are celebrated for vivid imagery. And very vivid, and lyrical texts that sound like music. Alice's most popular titles include A Song for Gwendolyn Brooks, Just Like a Mama, which we just talked about in our parenting group, Honey Baby Sugar Child, and Memphis, Martin, and the Mountaintop, which received the 2019 Coretta Scott King Honor Medal. She lives in Memphis, Tennessee, where at a young age, her mother nurtured her writing talent with prayer, poetry books, and praise. Did I miss anything?
No, not a thing.
No, not a thing. Wonderful. So tonight we're here to talk about Alice Faye's newest releases, Evicted, and openly what it means to be free. Can we start with Evicted?
Yes, let's start with Evicted. Evicted is okay. Here. The struggle for the right to vote, which is actually, it's very timely. And yes. I know that you have parents who listen to your podcast. So for Evicted, the struggle for the right to vote, and also for Opal Lee, both publishing companies have made free teacher guides, free discussion guides for both books. So what I can do is, if you have a link on your website,
okay,
I can give you both of those guides for both of the books. But let's talk about Evicted, though. You know, you mentioned that I live in Memphis. Memphis is famous for being the place where Dr. King was assassinated.
Yes.
But what so few people don't understand is that Memphis is 50 miles away from a place called Fayette County, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And in Fayette County, Tennessee, in 1959, it was agriculture. Memphis is a big old hick town, but on the outskirts of it are a variety of agriculture, land, the plains of Tennessee, cotton fields, corn fields, okay? Mm-hmm. And so 50 miles from Memphis, in a place called Fayette County, Black folks in Memphis in 1959 were voting. But 50 miles away in the rural areas, Black people were not voting. And the reason they were not voting is because of the history of racial terror and lynching in those areas. So in 1959, there was this court case where a Black man was falsely accused of murdering a white man, and the Black sharecroppers all converged on the courthouse because they wanted to see this case, because for the first time in the history of Fayette County, there was a Black lawyer coming to try a case. Mm-hmm. When all these sharecroppers got there in the courthouse and they realized there was not one Black person on the jury, they immediately said, how could we have been on this jury? How can we get on this jury? And the Black lawyer informed them, unfortunately, y'all couldn't have served on this jury because you have to be registered. And there are very few. I mean, it might have been less than 30 Black folks on the voter registration roll. So anyways, the Black people, the sharecroppers in the town at the time said, we got to do something about this. They started the first grassroots voting rights registration drive. The white status quo in the city evicted the sharecroppers from the land, relegated them to living in tents for two and a half years. And it was awful. But this is what happens. You remember John Lewis on that Edmund Pettus Bridge?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what happened following the Edmund Pettus Bridge in 1965? You then got the passing of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? John Lewis would not have made it to that Edmund Pettus Bridge, and there would be no signing of the 1965 Voting Rights Act unless there had been the sharecroppers in Fayette County who were relegated to those tents, because that tent city movement, which was a grassroots voters registration rights movement, that one movement in 1959 is what gave John Lewis the idea with SNCC and all of those other alphabet social civic rights groups, SCLC, SNCC, NAACP, all of those groups. Those sharecroppers in Fayette County, Tennessee, gave those groups the idea to go into the rural areas of the South to initiate voters' registration drives. That's where the idea came from. Idea did not come from Dr. King. The idea was not John Lewis's original idea. The idea came from Black sharecroppers in West Tennessee. And that's what my book is about. But here's the thing. When you are talking about these heavy, deep subjects with young children, you have to put the story in the context of a child. Yes. So the thing that makes that evicted story so interesting is because the good Lord led me to a man named James Jamerson.
Yes.
Who at his young age in 1959, he was what I call a selective mute. He was a selective mute. He did not talk very much because he had been moved to silence and quietness by the death of his sister. And so he was not a talkative kid, but his mom and dad were part of those farmers who led the voting registration drive in Fayette County. And so when he witnessed his mom and dad rise up to capture their voting rights, it inspired something in him that he too wanted, as a kid, wanted to participate in the civil rights movement. And so the story Evicted is about the sharecroppers and their movement to vote, but it is also about a selective mute, a young child learning to use his voice for good and for justice and for freedom. Because at the end of the story, you see James Jr. move from being a selective mute, very quiet, very pensive, to being someone who dares to skip school, leave his desk, leave his school books, and go and march on behalf of integration. And he also dares to leave his Black school in 1966 to then go and integrate the first high school in Fayette County. So it's a book. Evicted is, it's telling the history of the voting struggle in America, but it is also discussing the life and times of a real American hero who was a child who decided to use his life, his young life, as an activist on behalf of justice.
And wow, so powerful for our children to hear, and the history. And first, I just want to say thank you for all of that, number one. And just to put it into perspective for the parents, if you don't know the history, there were, I think in your book, you say a population of 28,000.
Yes.
Yes. And 2/3 of them were Black. but there were less than 30, as you said earlier, that were actually on the voting registrar.
Yeah.
Yes. And so you can hear, you know, how we were restricted and, you know, sent away from the polls. And what was interesting to me is in your book, you mentioned the KKK, but also another group, the White
Citizens Council.
I don't think that many people know about the White Citizens Council.
Yeah. So the White Citizens Council was like the KKK in three-piece suits. Okay. Mm-hmm. The White Citizens Council were those white men in a southern city who owned businesses. They were entrepreneurs, you know, and so White Citizens Council sounds respectable, right? Yeah. But their real intention was to make sure that Black citizens knew to stay in their place. Okay. And also, will you allow me, if you don't mind? The question that children ask me oftentimes, they say, well, if you had a town and it was like, you know, 3/4 Black, but only 30 people on the voting roster, why were those Black folks? It was not against the law for Black people to vote. So why were those Black folks not on the roll? And they call that, tell your children, they call that voter suppression. They call that voter intimidation. And the thing that had intimidated the people so was the legacy of lynching in that area. And so I wrote a poem because sometimes, and that's, I write about weighty things, but I also oftentimes I write about those things in poems because poems are short, they're emotional, and they convey the story in a very small dose of power. For lack of a word. So is it okay if I read the poem from Evicted?
Alice, well, you can do whatever you want on this show. Okay,
all right. Thank you so very much. Thank you so very much, Professor. All right. So what I'm going to do is the name of this poem is called The Ghost of Thomas Brooks. And it is based on a lynching that actually happened in Fayette County in 1915. And it explains for children why Black folks were not on that voting roster, even though it was not against the law for them to vote. The ghost of Thomas Brooks. My talk ain't polished. Listen anyway. This is my body, battered and bruised. See my bulging eye? Call me Tom Brooks, here and not here. I am the wind. Click, click. A crowd of grinning white folk snapped my picture. Kodak Brownie cameras cost $2. It is April 1915. My cracked Black boots and broken Black limbs dangle from the trestle of a railroad bridge in Somerville. I killed a rich white farmer and his helper, they say. They say so much that ain't true. Click, click, pictures tell the story as buzzing white children chirp with glee. They is so happy to miss a day of school and dance in circles at the hanging of a Negro. Me, the ghost of Thomas Brooks.
Thank you.
Why are you laughing? We just talked about a Negro dying.
Because I don't know how to handle all of the emotion that just put in me.
It's too much. Right. It's too much. So it's like, okay, make levity, make lighter, because it's too much. And you know what? That's how Black folks been coping since 1619. That's how we've been coping. It's like, you know, you take that heaviness and you've got to turn it into a smile, you know, because it's heavy. It's heavy.
It is heavy. I was listening to something the other day in the car with my son on the way from bringing him from school. And it Masterclass, that like group of trainings that they have online, has something that they released about Black love and Black liberty and freedom and things like that. And I was listening to the woman who headed up the 1619 initiative. And she was talking, and she was talking, and my son was like, "Mommy," he said, "you didn't watch the news yesterday because you said it was too sad. So why are you listening to this?" And I said, "Because listening to this, it happened in the past, but there's still so much work to be done." Mm-hmm. And it will motivate us to push forward and try to get those things done. And he kind of just, nodded his head. And we talked about it again later. But books like yours and poems like that are so important for our children and our families. There are so many adults walking around that don't know our history. So many families that need to be aware. And the stories need to be carried forward. It's so powerful that you were able to talk to these families, because I read and somebody did a profile on you about this book. And you were given a poetry book.
A book of photographs.
Yes, the photographs.
I was given two things happened. Like, pictures tell the story, Mm-hmm. So two things happened in the writing process of Evicted. The first thing is how the book came to be. I went to a funeral, a Memphis funeral of a Black Memphis doctor. And at the funeral was a man named Ernest Withers, who is the photographer who took the last pictures of King when he was in Memphis. Ernest Withers was my church photographer when I was a little kid. So I knew him. But at the time, I was writing a book called My Piece de Resistance, my book that's called Memphis, Martin, and the Mountaintop. And I wanted to interview Ernest Withers about the book and the Memphis sanitation strike. So when I saw him at the funeral, I said, "Hey, can I interview you?" He said, "Yeah, after this funeral is over, meet me down at my Bill Street photography studio." So I said, "Okay." So I go down, we talk about the Memphis sanitation strike. We talk about Dr. King. And before I leave, I give him a book of mine as a gift. He gives me a book of his as a gift. And he gives me his collection of civil rights photographs. And in that collection was a picture of sharecroppers from Tent City. And I was like, "Okay, well, who are these people?" It was the sharecroppers. It was their sad faced children. They were in these secondhand clothes. It was just a moving photograph, right? And I said, "Okay," started reading about it. I lived 50 miles away from Tent City, had never heard about it, right? So then those pictures inspired me to write the story. But then something else happens. After I find real families who had participated in Tent City and I arranged interviews for them, one Saturday, got in my car, I'm headed 50 miles to the, to the country, as they say, to Fayette County. And when I get there, I'm talking to James Jamerson, who is the guy that I'm interviewing that day. And I'm on my way. Right. So I haven't gotten there, but I got 50 miles to go. So I call him like midway. I say, "Mr. James, I'm coming. Are you ready for the interview?" He says, "Yes." I say to him, I don't even know what made me say this, but I say to him, "Do you have any family photo albums?" He says, "Yes." I said, "Can you bring them with you when we do the interview today?" He says, "Yes." He brings the photo albums, those pictures of him at 5 years old, his sister at 3 years old before she passes away, his mom, his dad, people who were in the movement with his mom and dad, his mom and dad who abandoned him when they were five. He has a cafe picture of them at some kind of juke joint. Amazing stuff. It was really, really moving. But you also know what? There's a third thing about photographs in that connected to that story also. When Thomas Brooks was actually lynched, it happened. Children, white children, were taken out of Fayette County schools. They were taken to the site at the bridge, and their parents bought $2 Kodak cameras. And there was a guy at that site printing pictures. Here is the thing. What does everybody have now? Why is it that we have a murderer now charged for George Floyd's death? Somebody what took a picture. Pictures tell the story. Why do we have the signing of the 1965 Voting Rights Act and the signing of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, it's because when America confronted those pictures, when America confronted pictures of the dogs biting children and the water hose being turned on children, the heart was pricked. And they had to make a conscious decision, a conscious choice to tell politicians, this ain't right. This is not right. And so pictures are powerful, you know? And now what's really interesting is that everybody got a camera. And it makes a difference.
It does make a difference. And pictures are powerful. And I want to say, though, your book, Evicted, and all of your work, your illustrator, Charlie Palmer, talented, beautiful work. Beautiful. But even without the pictures, your words just bring the story to life. I could have put my hand over the picture and read the words and seen the sadness of the little boy in the beginning of the story. And I feel like children, even today, can resonate with this story because there are so many grandmothers out there still doing the work of the parent. You know what I mean?
Stop. Can I just put a plug for another book, ma'am? Okay.
Yes.
The book is called Just Like a Mama. Sorry. And it's about that, about grandmothers now shoring up to do the work of mothers and fathers and aunties shoring up to do the work of mothers and fathers. In fact, you know, when it comes to books, I say on my sign there, get one book, give one book. When it comes to books, we need to really understand as a Black community that books are the gifts that keep on giving. And what you do is you just keep sharing books that you think are important. You keep sharing fiction books, novels, fun books, graphic novels, coloring books. I mean, you know, comic books. You just keep sharing books with children so that any way they can catch it, catch the passion for literacy and learning and Black history. Do whatever you can to help them catch that fever and that fire, because books can change the heart from not having compassion to being most compassionate. Books can change the heart from children being selfish and self-centered to wanting to express love and kindness to others. You know, books can bring enlightenment to ignorance, right? And foolishness. So, you know, books are the gifts that keep on giving. And I am intentional. I am very intentional about writing books, first of all, that prick my spirit, but then also writing books that I hope are emotionally palpable, you know, and filled with imagery and love and light. I just, you know, Black preachers always say, I hope I preach it the way I feel it. I just try to write the books in the way that I feel about the subjects and these things that have happened in history.
Yeah. So I want to say, I mean, I couldn't have said any of that better myself. Parents, when you pick up this book, Evicted, I just want to point you. I know some of you, when you're looking at picture book biographies or you're learning the history, it feels like a lot to go through a whole book in one sitting. You know, don't feel like you need to. Take one, two pages at a time, break them down. Take advantage of the resources in the back of the book. Alice Faye, I'm sorry, guys, I have my notes here, but in the back of the book, there's so many resources, books, music, films, websites, places to visit that she's listed in the back of the book that you can find useful.
Look, I'm gonna help you. Okay, I'm gonna help
okay.
you. Okay. There you go. Evicted. Can you see it?
There it is.
Okay.
So I thank you for talking with us about Evicted. We also want to make sure we talk about your beautiful, beautiful, your other new book, Opal Lee.
Yes.
And what it means to be free.
Yes. Yes. So like openly, because you are in the city of Dallas, right? Mm-hmm. And so openly and what it means to be free, you know, that second subtitle is called The True Story of the Grandmother of Juneteenth.
Juneteenth.
And so we know that Opal Lee is the grandmother from Fort Worth who since 2016 has spent her life marching across America, collecting signatures to make Juneteenth a national holiday. And the Lord helped her during the summer of June 2021. The Congress voted, the Senate voted, and the president signed into law that Juneteenth is now a national holiday. A lot of people think that Opal Lee was the first one to make this initiative, but she's not. The initiative started long ago in like 1979, 1980, but nothing had happened. And by 2016, Opal Lee said, look, if it is the last thing I do, I'm going to use my life to continue what people before her had already started, which was to make Juneteenth a national holiday. And so with her popularity was swelling in 2020, was that with the death of George Floyd, her popularity was swelling. And HarperCollins decided that, hey, here's this brave African-American woman encouraging children and adults to unify and come together, Democrats, Republicans, Black children, white children, to come together in unity under the banner of Juneteenth. Because what Opal Lee ultimately wants people to understand is that Juneteenth is not a Black holiday. Juneteenth is an American holiday that represents liberation. And so when anytime a child reads about Juneteenth, no matter what nation and continent they are living in, and they read about Juneteenth and freedom coming to the enslaved in America, they are reading about a freedom movement that is applicable to wherever they are, and freedom is not. The book stands as an emblem of what can happen when people come together to make a sacrifice in the name of liberation. And then there's where you get the joy, because liberation is joyful. Liberation is a reason to celebrate and rejoice. And so Juneteenth is a holiday about celebration and jubilation, but also the book is about Opal Lee, the individual fire in Opal Lee that kept her marching, teaching, preaching, talking until something happened and America paid attention to make Juneteenth a national holiday.
Thank you. You said so much. Can I tell you what my favorite line is out of the book?
Okay, tell me.
I know what it is, though. I don't know. It might seem simple, but it's special to me because of what it did for me. So I hated that zoo. Mm. I loved it, too. The birdhouse was my favorite. And this is why that line spoke to me, because I'm in this stage. My son is 7, of teaching him our history and using these books to teach our history. And in him learning about, you know, how we were kept out of places, I see him struggling with that same dichotomy. Like, I love the zoo. I hated to. I love the library. I hated to when he learned about us being able to go to library but not take books out. I constantly see him struggling. When George Floyd happened, the struggle, like, you know, do I hate these people? Do I love them? You know, it's, you see it. And when I read that line, I'm like, this is Aiden, this dichotomy, this is him. And so that really spoke to me.
You know what? You know what line I thought you were going to say?
Okay,
understand, the reason why I love the Opal Lee book is because I wrote it intentionally to read somewhat like a call and response, like a Black church experience, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So if you notice in Opal Lee, you're talking about something. You're talking about, now this book, Opal Lee is for, let's talk about age groups. Opal Lee is for ages 4 years old to around 8 years old. Evicted is for around like fifth grade to grown folk, right?
Yeah.
Opal Lee, because it's for such a young audience, the language is very spare. You don't have a lot of words. Also, mm-hmm. I am intentional to make sure, like you read that line, I love the zoo, I hated it too. Also, the language is very lyrical. It's spare. It's to the point. It's like music. Mm-hmm. You can almost like I said, it's like a call and response, like a sort of church experience. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking that your favorite line would be, mm-hmm. Juneteenth is bigger than Texas, singing or dancing bands. Juneteenth is freedom rising, and freedom is for everyone. Juneteenth is you and me. Or this one, which is really like a song, mm-hmm. freedom, hope, and joy divine. Juneteenth means it's freedom time.
I love it. I'm... You put so much.
I was thinking it was like one of those jazzy, you know, jazzy lines or something.
I mean, the whole book is beautiful. That the line I said just resonated with me because of my son, right? But those right. Now I'm not, whenever we read it again, I'm not going to be able to help but read it just like you just did. And y'all watching, when you read it, watch, you're going to do the same thing. Thank and you'll have to okay, come so
let's
back.
Let's do a plug. Hey. Let's do a plug for another book that is nowhere in the atmosphere here. But okay. Say it with me. Honey, Baby, Sugar, Child.
Honey, Baby, Sugar, Child. Yes.
That is the book that I wrote for mothers as a love song to their babies. And so that book is a classic, but again, it's one of those books that I wrote intentionally to be spoken as like a call and response or a song. Mm-hmm. And that book is also, it's one of the oldest books that I have that's still in print. I wrote it in 2005 and it is still in print to this very, very day.
It's a beautiful book. Thank you. And I told you earlier that in the group we had just talked about Just Like a Mama. And I had asked a little late in the game if anybody had any questions for today. And somebody asked, how do you switch like back and forth between these heavy, like Evicted and to like Just Like a Mama and Honey, Baby, Sugar, Child? You know, like what is that switch like?
Well, I mean, you know, it's sort of like... The soul can only take so much. Mm. It's just like what happened when we read the poem about Thomas Brooks. It's sort of like at some point you've got to have levity and something light. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so when I get through with one book that's somewhat heavy, like for example, I wrote Evicted and Opal Lee back to back, right?
Okay.
And I'm like, what am I going to do now? I need something really like, you know, something fun, heartfelt.
Yeah.
And so I came up with this idea about Negro spirituals.
Okay.
Now, Negro spirituals can be heavy, right? Mm-hmm. They can be
heavy. Yeah.
But I came up with this idea of taking Negro spirituals because, you know, Negro spirituals, the lines can morph. The lines... Anybody singing the song can make the line whatever they want it to be because there is no set pattern of what the lines in the Negro spiritual are. So I took I took two Negro spirituals and I just made them fun, loving, spirit-filled interpretations of This Train. That's the first one, This Train. And then the other one was I Gotta Sing, right? And so those are the next two books that you'll probably hear from me in 2023 and 2024. And then also I wrote a book on Coretta Scott King. That's going to be available in 2023 as well. Now that book, and I know we're walking all over the place, honey, but that's fine.
We get some insider information, y'all.
Yeah, so look, the Coretta Scott King book that I'm working on, that will be available in 2026. It is a great companion to my Martin Luther King book, Memphis Martin and the Mountaintop, because I'm giving you two perspectives on Dr. King and Coretta that you never see. So, for example, in Memphis Martin and the Mountaintop, that book, which is available now, that book is everywhere. It's my piece de resistance. Well, and these two, Opal Lee and Evicted, those two, I love them too. But in that Memphis Martin and the Mountaintop book, you get to see King on the day before and after his assassination. You also get to see why King was killed, which is my opinion. King was now had changed his focus from bus tickets and coffee counters to economics, to money. He was now coming to get money, a living wage, not just for Black folks. He was coming to get a living wage for every full-time working American who did not have one. And this is why King had to be killed. And so that book is, you never really see books. When you see children's books about King, it's King and Selma, King and Birmingham, King and Montgomery. You never see. My book is the first book where you see King in Memphis. Okay. And then my Coretta Scott King book, which will be available, it's called Coretta's Journey. That'll be available in 2023. That book
can't wait.
Look, that book is talking about the patriarchy that Coretta encountered, which is why when we think of Coretta Scott King, think about it. If I don't know how old you are, but when I was a child, I am a child of the late 60s, early 70s. And at that time, when we were ever introduced to King, I mean, to Coretta Scott King, when we were introduced to his wife, she was always introduced to us as the dedicated, dutiful widow of Dr. King, you know, the lady with the long hair and the veil, or on the cover of Lifetime magazine looking very pensive and sad, right? But that is far, 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 far. That ain't a bit more Coretta Scott King than the man in the moon. That ain't who she was. Coretta Scott King was a prophet. Coretta Scott King was a woman with a voice. And here's the thing. The Bible says that in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord. So what happens with Coretta is that when Dr. King was murdered, because the patriarchy now had been removed, then we now, King Coretta Scott King preaches her first sermon in Memphis on April 8th. I think it is 1968.
Okay.
When she comes to Memphis and she comes to the steps of City Hall in Memphis, and she tells America that there is work to be done, that her husband is dead, but there is still work to do. That is when Coretta Scott King preaches her first sermon. Prior to that, Coretta Scott King was singing. She was singing concerts. She was not known for preaching and prophesying. But after she preached her first sermon in Memphis on April the 8th, from there she goes to Harvard to be the very first woman to deliver the class day speech at Harvard University. And then from there, we never stop hearing Coretta preach, prophesy, and promote nonviolence, which is what her husband gave us. And so, what we also don't understand about Coretta is that a lot of people think when I was a kid, they promoted, I guess, for lack of a better word, that it was King who made Coretta. That's not the case. Coretta was already made when she met Martin, which is why he wanted to marry her, because she was a thinker. She was a pacifist. When they met in 1951 in Boston, she had already been to presidential conventions, okay, political conventions. She had already fought the Antioch School Board as a as a protest of one voice. And so she had already met Bayard Rustin while she was a high school kid in Alabama. She already had been formed. Her mother and her father came from a relationship where they were equal partners building a business together. And her mother would tell Coretta constantly, her and her sister, as they were growing up, she would tell her, look, you do not have to get married in order to be somebody. Be yourself. And so therefore, when Martin had an encounter with Coretta that first time, his first date, he was like, girl, I want to marry you, because he had met a full grown woman. And that's what my story is about. But here's the thing. My story is for children. So I give you the story in a combination of poems. All right. Also, Opal Lee, as I said, it's told in call and response. So it's also given to you in a way that you hear the history of Juneteenth, but you also hear the music. And one more thing, the reason why every parent needs this book, because books inspire children when they are interactive and openly, and what it means to be free. Repeat after me. Say red punch recipe.
Red punch recipe.
It includes a Juneteenth red punch recipe that parents can make together with their kiddos.
I could sit here all day. All day, Alice Faye. All day. Listen, y'all, we just got a word. I cannot wait. I mean, look, I don't know if you're watching this. If you're watching this right now, if you don't have Alice Faye's books, I just implore you to go and get them, read them, share the stories. I've read them all and I want Coretta. I'm ready today. It's not 2023 yet, but I'm ready. Oh my gosh. Alice, is there anything else that you want to share about your books today?
Yes, I do. I want to, is this almost at the end? I want to encourage you all to notice the sign. Notice the sign. Mm-hmm. It's called the Go-Go Movement. The Go-Go Movement is this: get one book, give one book. So if you buy Opal Lee, get one for yourself, give one to someone else. If you buy Evicted, get one for yourself and give one to someone else. If you go back to my old catalog, and if you buy Honey Baby Sugar Child, if you buy Memphis Martin and the Mountaintop, if you buy a song for Gwendolyn Brooks, get one book, give one to someone else. Books are the gifts that keep on giving. One more thing. Do you need a miracle? Do you need a miracle in your life?
Yes.
If you need a miracle in your life, if you need a miracle for your children, if you need a miracle for your family, if you need a miracle for your community, be a miracle. The way to get a miracle is to be one for someone else. I thank you. I had so much fun. I hope you could tell. I had so much fun being here and talking. And when my other books are available, please invite me back again. And visit my website, y'all. My website is Alice Faye Duncan. That's Faye with an E. AliceFayeDuncan.com. I would love to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you, Alice Faye, for being here. We want to give a shout out to your glasses. I love
it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. And goodness, everybody have a wonderful night. Thank you.
Thank you. Talk soon.
Talk to you soon.